Yes, good.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, and thank you so much for joining us here today. It's Monday, March 26th. It's a beautiful day here in Philadelphia, and thank you so much for joining us. We're looking forward to a wonderful program. Our board is already lit up. We thank you so much for all of the callers, and I see some of our regular callers here today. So I'm just going to talk just a little bit about the upcoming Military Women's Day event for Friday here in Philadelphia. We're looking forward to a wonderful, wonderful event talking with other women veterans and males and recognizing strong women veterans who have survived over the years, some of their transitioning concerns. So we're just delighted that Friday will be a day of just coming together for many, some for getting many answers and just networking. And we're looking to provide many resources and connect resources here that exist in Philadelphia. I will tell you that I just left breakfast with Congressman Brady. Congressman Brady is actually not the district in which represents us, but as a federal representative, we do look to him for our guidance and making sure that he's voting on the legislation that concern us. So I decided to get up this morning to go to have breakfast with Brady out in Southwest Philadelphia. And interesting discussions with many who believed that, they really just don't understand. I really had to push through to Congressman Brady just to get him to understand that women veterans are unique and their characteristics are very, very, very sometimes delicate. And we need to be more attentive, if you will, to quality of life issues concerning not just the veterans, but life in general, really, because some of the things that exist are by dynamics that are controlled at different levels, if you will. We have a lot of violence and, you know, a lot of health issues. I'm not talking about the veterans, per se, have a lot of violence. I'm talking about violence in the communities under the in the various districts where we have congressional representation. So, you know, I was glad to be in with Mr. Brady. I think he's a pretty fair gentleman. I think that, you know, we have to be mindful, though, that oftentimes they have legislative staff at different levels where they are sometimes maybe a little bit more involved in the goings on in the activities concerning the congressman than we aware. But I learned today that what I was told about the congressman's staff being no longer there, this whole process was somehow an in-house strategy to circumvent or block the opportunity for me to speak with him or to meet with him or to have him meet with us. So we're just a little bit concerned about the fact that we are not at a level of respect here in our city. Unlike many other states where women's issues are at the top of every agenda, but we do recognize that there have been many funding dollars that have come into our city of Philadelphia where the various legislators actually have developed projects where women veterans, homelessness has been the center for appropriating certain funds for projects and for building certain housing facilities to house homeless women veterans. However, I still know that there are many women veterans who continue to not have access to these properties for many reasons. So this is an issue that I'm going to be addressing, and I let that be known to Mr. Brady when I saw him today that my trip to Washington on Thursday would include maybe some unpleasantries that may need to be ironed out before I leave. And so he did say that he would call, and I do know that he's called me in the past before, and I felt very comforted in that he did offer some interest, if you will, in resolving the matters that I presented to him, and we're going to hope that this is the case coming up this week. We will be talking a little bit about some very disturbing topics to include maybe a touch on with the very sensitive tragedy of our males. And we're going to have our special guest host, Black Hawk, and just share in some of her concerns. We had an interesting dialogue yesterday about to what that gave me somewhat of a preview, but I'm going to invite her in and give her the mic and allow her to expound on some of these very, very sensitive topics. And let's see if we can create a dialogue around some of the contributing factors, if you will. Louise, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, Kathy. Hello.
Thank you so much for joining us today. I just want to take a minute just to appreciate you for your research, your time that you commit to this half an hour program. And I want you to know that your information is so very valued. And this is a particular segment that I'm going to particularly highlight because I driving back from the Congressman Brady breakfast, I did hear that on the local station that they were discussing a similar topic. So let me hear you. I'm going to make a contrast and comparison, if you will, of some of the other dynamics and similar incidences that have gone on. So the mic is open to you.
Thank you, Kathy. Hello, listeners. Once again, I am Black Hoth, and I'm bringing to your attention and article published in Veterans News Now, and it's dated Friday, March the 23rd. It's License to Kill, Wisconsin Castle Doctrine's First Victim. This is a similar incident which occurred in Madison, Wisconsin. And I'm just going to read the preface. The eyes of the nation are focused on the shooting death of Trayvon Martin on February 26, 2012, at the hands of a neighborhood watch leader in a small Florida community. The shooter claims self-defense and has yet to face charges because of Florida's own version of Wisconsin's Castle Doctrine. In Slinger, Wisconsin, Bo Morrison was shot to death March the 3rd, 2012. He was 20 years old, had graduated college, and joined the Marine Corps. There was a drinking party or something similar to that nature. The police were called. Since he was underage, he and several of his friends left. In his attempt to go back home, an individual there, not at the party and whatnot, called 911, said that it's very detailed. I don't want to take up too much of your time. But what happened is he called, first and foremost, and he claimed that this man was breaking into his house. However, the man was shot off of his property. Okay? And it states in here, the homeowner's account of events states that he did speak to Mr. Morrison, the man that he shot and killed. In detail, the district attorney for Washington County stated that the incident occurred 2 o'clock in the morning, and the homeowner thought he heard someone out on their enclosed porch. The report states there were no lights on and that Bo Morrison, an African-American, was wearing dark clothing. The shooter claimed to have seen something, and then he saw Morrison. He also states that he spoke to Mr. Morrison. Mr. Morrison raised his hands and took a step toward the homeowner. Read that. Listen. The homeowner states that he spoke to Morrison. Morrison raised his hands and took a step forward. Question. The homeowner was calm enough to speak to him. It's dark, 2 o'clock in the morning. Did he have night vision goggles? Who called the police about the party? At 2 o'clock in the morning and only firing a single shot. The shooter, and I'm quoting, must have been a sniper at one point in time to be able to fatally shoot another human being in the dark half asleep. Even if this account is stated as true, did the homeowner call the police and then went to confront the intruder? If so, there was a door between the home and the enclosed porch that could have been locked and guarded by the homeowner. The homeowner claimed that he was concerned about the well-being of his family. Then, if that's true, why would he leave them somewhere else in the house alone and then search for the person that's breaking into their home after calling the police? Moreover, how long did the homeowner have a gun? Now, this had been in the proximity of his home, but did he recently apply for a concealed carry permit? A lot of people say this is different from Trayton Martin's case, but is it? We have a young African-American male wearing dark clothes, being killed by another who went and found Morrison after calling the police and ended up killing him, then claimed state law as self-defense. And there's several statements in here, including the Representative Chris Taylor about the Right to Kill Bill, AB 69, the one in Wisconsin. It's one of the most extreme bills in the country, and is now the most extreme law in the country besides Florida. It is heartbreaking that the legislature has allowed this reckless law to go forward, and now another young man is dead. And that said, there was a peaceful protest in Wisconsin for Bo Morrison. This is a Marine. Same thing happened to him. And I believe, in my opinion, there is a definite parallel. Kathy, back to you.
Yes, I'm actually trying to follow it up on the two causes of concern that I had for Trayvon's murderer, and one was, why was he a town watch volunteer? It wasn't clear to me that he actually owned a property there. You know, what was his relationship to that particular community? And secondly, when he called the police to tell them about Trayvon, the suspicious guy, why did he tell the police that he had a gun?
Very valid.
Why did he tell them that he had a gun? Because if the police were coming into a volatile situation where there was a man carrying a 9mm, he put his own self in jeopardy, maybe?
Well, those are one of many questions that need to be answered in addition to the same incident in Wisconsin, because it's one thing to have a permit to carry a firearm. That's why the question was posed in this report in Wisconsin regarding a similar incident. But my concern is, additionally, there should be, it first and foremost, your first response is to call the appropriate law enforcement agency that is supposed to be doing this. Number one. Number two, the protocol that I know from my years in the military, you are to notify them immediately that, yes, you are in possession of a weapon, so that you must follow the same instructions that are given to you by the reporting authorities, which in this case was emergency response. That individual had been instructed, do not pursue, despite the fact he did not reveal the fact, divulge the fact that he was carrying a firearm.
Mm-hmm.
In this instance, in Wisconsin, this man had a license to have a firearm but not carry a firearm. But the same rule applies. If the law enforcement, if the responding authorities are not aware that you have a firearm, you could very easily be shot. The objective to have a firearm is to protect your home and those of your immediate concern in the event that you do not have the opportunity to contact those that are authorized to make, I mean, you got citizen's arrest, you got vigilantism. Now, one of the main concerns that we should address as us that do have a military background is why, when someone calls, if someone is on a neighborhood watch, if someone is calling to state that, well, why is there not a protocol laid in place that everyone that has a permit to possess a firearm, whether it is a license to carry or you just have a firearm permit. Why is this information not put in the database so that when you do call emergency police and your phone number, your cell phone number comes up, or you state your name, why is there not something laid in place to notify them immediately that you have a weapon, you have a permit? So when they come to the property in question, so that they come to the proximity of where you claim some type of a violation of the law is occurring, they already know that you are also armed. And why did not proper protocol apply regarding discharge of a firearm, regarding ballistics, seizing said weapon, bringing said individual into custody, for a formal statement, the same method that we use in the military when we have to discharge a firearm, especially those in the military police community are fully aware of that. Why weren't those steps taken as well in ballistics run and things of this nature? Because a permit to carry a firearm, it does not necessarily mean that the firearm that you discharged was the one which is on your license to own a weapon. Many things were overlooked in both of these instances. So this should be taken not only as a civil rights viewpoint, in my opinion, but from a federal viewpoint through the Department of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, and everybody regarding the regulation of permits to carry, license to possess, and why this information is not made known to your local law enforcement agencies at the very least, but hopefully eventually at a national level.
Well, you know, we could be on a better track for getting an understanding. We need to get an understanding for ourselves, for our community, and begin to have these discussions. I think Trayvon's death means more. It is more of an eye-opener than the bigger death because of the attention that it's got now. You know, me, I have been talking about how these gunshot wounds are a preferred choice for research and for using the organs and preserving organs. Now, you know, my conversations have been based on some previous studies that I've done and some activities that I have been privy to. Now, you know, I just posted on Facebook about in response to somebody mentioning Cheney receiving a new heart. And I questioned, well, we need to know what Trayvon Martin's blood type was and to know whether or not he was buried with his heart. Because, see, my level of understanding on research and the 21st century ability to keep the pattern, the power to be alive, we are in a place where we can't take for granted that they put that kind of value in the ground. And I'm saying that because I have to be aware that gunshot wound victims have been singled out when it comes to organ preservation. So I want to make sure that we're looking at this from all angles. When you talk about what value his death had to anybody, who benefited from the death of Trayvon Martin? So, you know, I'm going to take it to another level to put the value of organs, hearts, pancreas, liver, lungs in the ground, you know, would be a major, that they say they shipped his body 40 miles away, okay? Now, let's keep in mind the context of this discussion because at some point it makes a lot of sense to me as when I add these dynamics to some other people thinking and provoke their thoughts in another way. The concern of the father and the mother on TV yesterday was that they were concerned they shipped his body 40 miles away, John Doe. They didn't know who he was. The total tag, John Doe. So, you know, for me, I look at all these dynamics. You know, you got to keep yourself 21st century ready. Keep your antennas up. What you see on television, don't discount that it's being factual or at least some way to preface some level of information that they're trying to share because they want you to know that there are abilities. They want to tell other countries what we're doing, we're cloning, we're using hearts, and we're keeping people alive who should have been dead. How many heart transplants have happened, Cheney had? 7, 8, 9, 10, who knows? We don't really know. But I do know what the value of the black man to society is determined to be some, none, no value except that their organs, they're more value dead than alive because their organs give them life. Now, you and I don't have these kind of discussions often because that's the kind of, you know, your professionalism is to some way and to engage other people in this kind of dialogue. It only draws suspicion because their minds are not operating at this capacity. But you keep that in mind as you begin to surmise the various components that you're putting together with the different deaths across the country. Who's benefiting from these deaths? Are they really burying these victims with these very valuable organs? Organ donorship is one of the biggest industries in the world, not in this country. You can take the final comment, Ms. Louise.
Oh, thank you. In that regard, I would once again like to bring to your attention, there is a website, veteransnewsnow.com, and it brings many of the dynamics that you have just presented into a forum based on news articles and opinions that are from the military, from prior service personnel, or those in similar capacities in the civilian sector, where we can have these types of discourse in a, shall we say, more of the same, because as you know, I'm black off, I can do it seven, and there's some things about my experience in the military which are not public knowledge, and there are forums where these things can be discussed in a, shall we say, more professional setting. I shall post this article on my Facebook, and there will be a link to the website. But our main concern is, now that we are out into the civilian sector, many of the things that we are knowledgeable in, many of our listeners that are civilians have no clue about the dynamics that we present to certain situations that we are now witnessing, encountering, and the issues that we present, the dynamics that we present as prior service in defense of this great nation, so help us God, they pretty much have no clue. They have never been exposed to this type of, many people call rhetoric, but we have informed, we have serious reasons to present these avenues, these angles to things that people don't have a clue about. In that manner, I'm going to just state what my Aunt Irene used to say, my great Aunt Irene. She said, you can't find fault if they have not been properly taught. There's many reasons why people are not told everything, because everything's not for everybody sometimes. But if you need to know it and somebody tells you exactly, tries to show it to you, don't dismiss them out of hand because it's something that you didn't find out until then. Take it in, and this is to my civilian listeners, digest it and process it. By that same vein, military personnel, former, present, or those that work in capacities that are not, quite karaoke in the open, we must retrain ourselves to understand that there is a serious information gap between what people are told, so that some of us can do our jobs to protect them, and what we know we had to do and the reasons why, when we come back here and try to explain to them what we read in the papers that they are provided doesn't necessarily make sense, courtesy of our experience and that type of mindset from a standpoint that protects this nation. It's there, just like this article right here, all the way over there in Wisconsin, that happened to a Marine. Nobody knew about that in the nation, but it happened in this great nation of ours. Things are put where, guess what, if you don't know where to glean them from, you have no clue about things of this nature occurring right in front of you. So I beg all of us to take the time to realize and recognize that we're talking to a segment of our nation that pretty much has been left in the dark. And we must not, in our frustration, run around screaming like a banshee so that they do not listen to what we have to say that we know is valid. And hopefully that will assist all of us to come together with an understanding of everything, as opposed to picking sides about who's wrong and who's right. Effie?
Well, I think we've had a wonderful program. We've wound down to the last few minutes. Is there anything that you would like to say concerning our upcoming Friday's event? I'm so looking forward to Friday. I will add that I'm going to Washington on Thursday. We're going to be talking to a congressional committee on a federal contract.
Excellent.
So we just
Yes. I'm highly motivated for Friday. Highly motivated.
I'm looking so forward to you being there. We're going to have a wonderful network of people. This is going to be an awesome networking opportunity, resourceful. And I'm looking forward to seeing you there. I did want to just at least send me a poem or two so that we can a program booklet, if you would. And I think that you'll be delighted to see some of the various resources that we are going to be spotlighting in our program booklet. So if you could send over something, that would be terrific. I think you'll be very proud. I said it would be proud to represent some of your work in our booklet. Thanks for joining us on the program today. We look forward to seeing you back next week on Monday. I think we'll be into the week of April by then. I'm not sure, but certainly we will have more discussion for you. I hope that the Blog Talk can join us and we have some interesting topics to discuss or just to expound more on what we talked about today or the Trayvon Martin case, because I think that the end is nowhere near on getting to the bottom of this crime. So I want to thank you all for joining us, and we'll look forward to seeing you next week.